This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Well, Nikki Haley has resigned. My prediction, she's going to run for the Senate in South Carolina in 2 years, and she is going to run for president in 2024. But who knows? It's just my guess. I mean, she's right enough, hard right enough to satisfy Trump. She's moderate enough to satisfy the mainstream street Republicans. She's a minority, which gives her super cred in Trump world and outside. And we'll see what happens. We'll see. And she's a woman. We'll see what happens. I think that she has a wide open path into the future. It's going to be interesting to see how she decides to choose or exploit that. There's a historian from Columbia University, Stephanie McCurry, who says that the current split in American society, this is a piece by Brad Reed and Ross Story, that the current split in American society mirrors the split over the legalization of slavery that occurred in the mid-19th century. She says this whole thing, that and what's so weird is that, you know, we're not having a crisis like the Civil War. I mean, you know, this is to a large extent, obviously, there are divisions in our society, and there are inconsistencies and inequalities, and you know, a lot of stuff going on that's wrong. For example, all the people in prison, you know, people of color being killed by police, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what the split is about, right? The split is that white people, particularly white men, feel, quote, cultural alienation. And when they measure that cultural alienation, that feeling that I'm under attack, my country's under attack, those people are coming to take my whatever, you know, my home, my job, my wife, my kids, my what, you know, fill in the blanks. When you measure that, you find that that feeling of alienation has actually increased since Donald Trump became president. Now, why would that be? Because he's feeding it. Because this is what he has to sell, him and Fox News and right-wing hate radio. Oh my God, look out, they're coming to get you. Even if they have to lie to do it. Politico has a piece up by Edward Isaac Dovers titled House Republicans Distort and Dissemble in Slashing TV Ads. These are words that they use instead of the word lie. But what they're talking about are lies. It's just that simple. This is a super PAC that is run by Paul Ryan, that is funded by, among others, the Koch brothers. Remember, they famously gave him $500,000 the day after he passed the tax cut? They get billions, Ryan gets $500,000, and boom, these ads start showing up. In one spot, this is quoted from the article, in one spot, a former CIA operative is accused of harboring terrorist sympathies. In another, military vets are said to be anti-American. Yeah, you know, the world is upside down. Democratic House candidate Jason Crow received a Bronze Star for heroism in Iraq. He was Lawyer of the Year for his veterans advocacy. So this guy's a veteran, a wounded and decorated veteran who got the Lawyer of the Year award from his state for his work, his law work after he came back from Iraq on behalf of veterans. And Paul Ryan's super PAC is running ads saying that he has neglected Colorado's veterans. Right. Democrat Abigail Spanberger, who is running against Dave Bratt. This is an amazing story. This is an absolutely amazing story. Dave, let me find it here. Yeah, Virginia Democrat Abigail Spanberger spent nearly a decade fighting terrorists as an undercover CIA officer. And Republicans are running ads right now saying that she harbors terrorist sympathies. Why? Because for 2 years she taught Muslims English as a second language. Now, while she was doing that, and thereafter officially, she was working for the CIA. She was spying on these people. And she's running now as a Democrat, right? I mean, you know, talk about military cred. And the Republicans are saying, well, you know, she taught those Muslims. We can't have that. There's another one. Ohio Democrat Aftab Perval, for instance, accuses the Indian Tibetan first generation American. These are the attack ads. Accuses him of aiding his former employer in making millions by helping Libyans reduce payments owed to American families killed by Libyan terrorism. It's because he worked for a law firm where he was doing antitrust litigation. Had nothing to do with Libyans or anything else. And he joined the firm after they did this work for the Libyans. And not mentioned in the ad was the fact that former President George W. Bush backed the settlement negotiation with Libya that his firm worked on. And the Steve Chabot, the guy who he's running against, was fine with it when he was in the House of Representatives. Well, he still is when it was approved by the House. But the Super PAC says that these ads, which tell lies about a Democrat, are actually increasing the poll numbers for the Republicans. Time after time after time, we're seeing this. Number one. Number two, then I get this press release yesterday. I'm on the right-wing press release list as well as the left-wing, and this is one that's from FreedomWorks. This is the group that the Kochs funded years ago, and I believe still are. FreedomWorks for America announces $100,000 independent expenditure in October to support vulnerable candidates. You know, the news media is all sitting around going, gee, look at this, this Republican, they'll take race by race, they'll go, all of a sudden they're tightening up. What could be happening? Is it because the voters are getting upset? No, it's because the Koch brothers are pouring their $300 million into the campaign. Representative Dave Bratt is getting money from FreedomWorks. Ted Budd, Republican in North Carolina, getting money from FreedomWorks. Peter Roskam, Republican in Illinois' 6th District, getting money from the Koch brothers. Mark Harris, Republican in North Carolina's 9th District, getting money for the Koch brothers. Koch brothers, by the way, live in New York and Nebraska. Denver Riggleman, Republican candidate for Virginia's 5th District. This is what they're bragging about, right? Literally, I got a press release. So what's the Republican strategy going into the midterm elections, into the congressional elections here? Angry mob. Matt Visor and Bob Costa writing in the, or Robert Costa writing in the Washington Post. When thousands of furious screaming protesters marched toward the Capitol over the weekend. Okay, you and I saw this and we saw, oh, cool, activism. Quote, Republican staffers peered out at the scene from the windows above. They were not alarmed, but elated. Republicans have cast the Trump resistance movement as, quote, an angry mob that threatens the country's order. They note that Trump and the Republicans who control Congress and the White House have massive financial and media infrastructure behind them, and they're casting themselves as defenders at the barricades. Dave Bratt, once again, I mentioned him. You know, they're running lying ads against his opponent. He's running against the liberal mob. GOP Senate candidate Corey Stewart has decried the mob tactics that tried to destroy Kavanaugh. Congressman Peter King, Republican from New York, chasing senators down the hall, running up the stairs of the Capitol. We've been taken aback by how people have reacted to it. We're responding. See, the Republicans are using this stuff on Fox News and on right-wing hate radio, and it's working. They're turning it into ads. The characterization, Visor and Costa write, evokes fear of an unknown and out-of-control mass of people. With its emphasis on the impact on traditional values and white voters, particularly men, it strikes the same notes as earlier Trump fanned attention to immigrants, MS-13 gang members, and African-American football players protesting police treatment of young black men. See, it's all kind of one fabric. The mob is coming. Who is the mob? Everybody except white men. Right, the mob is those women. It's those African American football players. This is their shtick. And they say this is a modern incarnation of Richard Nixon talking about the 1968 riots at the DNC, which were provoked by the Chicago police, let us remember. That's when Nixon started referring to anti-war protesters as the mob. Leftists, feminists, and academics, celebrities, Michael Avenatti, George Soros, Maxine Waters, this is the mob, they say. And really what it means is that the tax cuts are not stimulating their base, the tax cuts for billionaires. And the Democrats are seriously PO'd. John Weaver, a longtime Republican strategist, said, it's aiming to fire up Fox viewers. I'm sure there's some little old lady in Iowa who now keeps her doors locked because she thinks there's going to be some anarchist mob coming through Davenport. He continues, they want to take the freedom to assemble and turn it into a negative, dehumanize and belittle and dismiss the current activism. And they point out, this has been months in the making. The Republicans have been planning for this. They were hoping that women would come out in huge numbers. Chuck Grassley, they've encouraged mob rule. Orrin Hatch, a paid mob. Marco Rubio, imagine the coverage on cable news of an angry mob of conservatives stormed the steps of the Supreme Court building. Actually, that happened. It was called the Tea Party. And the media loved it. Mitch McConnell, we stood up to the mob. Trump, the radical Democrats have turned into an angry mob. The liberal mob attacking Dave Brat is coming out of Dave Brat's most recent ad. This is what the Republicans are running on. That if you have protested, you're not an American citizen exercising his or her First Amendment or their First Amendment right to petition your government for redress of grievance, which we used to think was an all-American value. No, you're a mob. You're part of the mob. So the question, will the mob show up and vote? I was rather shocked this morning to see Jacob Soboroff, the MSNBC reporter, show up at a university in California and just walk up to a group of about 25 or 30 students, all over 18 college students, and say, how many of you intend to vote? Out of the entire group, one person raised his hand. One. Under 35, half the voting rate of every other group.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If you know a young person who is not registered to vote, and odds are you do, have a talk with them, please. And welcome back. Connie in Malaga, Washington. Hey, Connie, thanks for watching us on Free Speech on DirecTV. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I am well. What's up, Connie?
Just want to ask you something. I know that we go through these cycles, and we had the suffragette movement. We had, the feminist movement.
If I may correct you, suffragette was a word that men used back in the early 1900s to ridicule the suffragists. The suffragette was a term of derisement. I keep hearing people use that term, but it's the old term that was used to put them down. Just so you know. Back to you, Connie. I'm sorry.
Okay. Hey, I learned something today.
It's the suffrage movement, the women's suffrage movement.
Okay, that movement where, you had no rights and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we went to, when I was in college, we went to kind of like the feminist movement with Gloria Steinem.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got the hashtag Me Too movement.
Right.
So what I'm wanting to know is, do you think there's going to be another, do you think this woman's rise will be of any help? Do you think that people standing, protesting is going to help? What do you think?
I think back in the 1970s and 80s and even the 90s, when Republicans ridiculed feminism, you'll recall for decades, Rush Limbaugh, maybe he still does, talked about feminazis. That resonated with white men to a large extent, and even many white women. I mean, keep in mind, 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump, who was essentially saying the same thing. I think, though, that the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, the stories of, I think there's actually a confluence between this and the video stories of young black men being shot by white cops, or being shot by cops, not always white, but being shot by, by blue. I think it's bringing together this it's shocking, people who previously were politically largely uninformed, and causing them to realize that there is something going on here, that white male privilege actually is a thing, and that it's been going on too long and it's gone too far. And so my guess is that, you know, each of these movements builds on the other. I mean, you could go back to, you know, Abigail Adams in 1778, or 1787 rather, you know, writing to her husband, "Don't forget the ladies," you know, and you know, we'll you know, "We will fight against you if you don't put women in the Constitution." And Adams wrote back to her saying, "Men are not going to give up their prerogatives." So you had that, and then you had the women's rights, Sarah Bradwell in the 1870s, who tried to practice law in Chicago, and was told by a judge that as a woman she couldn't even be in the courtroom. You know, there have been Elizabeth Cady around that same time, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. Susan B. Anthony voted and was arrested for it in November of 1878, as I recall. And so, you know, there's been all of these movements, and I think each one has built on the last. And it certainly feels to me like we're at a tipping point. Do you get that same sense, Connie?
I absolutely agree.
You do agree?
I agree, because I'm like a woman, and I have sued a corporation for harassment. One, I don't know.
Yeah.
I speak to a young person to vote. Never thought about it when I was young, but anymore it's like.
Well. Amen. Connie, I'm out of time, but thank you. Well said. We'll be right back. So it's really interesting, you know, Axios is reporting this from their morning newsletter. Well, I guess it's probably also on their website, Mike Allen's thing, but he's reporting that media companies are now doubling down on politics because suddenly politics is the new thing. Ever since Trump was elected, everybody's paying attention to politics. Why? Because Trump knows how to put on a reality show. And TV loves reality shows. Why? Because they're cheap. You'll recall back in the late 90s or early 2000s, there was a big writer's strike in Hollywood. And the TV networks, you know, they had contracts. They couldn't put shows on the air that weren't written by union writers. And the union writers had walked out. So what were they going to do? Well, the television networks invented this new genre, this brand new kind of television called the reality show, where they just bring, you know, either actors or real people in, and they would, you know, play things out, whether it was dating games or whether it was how to take on your boss or whether it was, you know, there was just a whole bunch of, and some of them were just, "Hey, look at me," you know, Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton and whatnot. All these, and I don't know if those came out of that era, but you get what I'm talking about. These reality shows were cheap to produce. You didn't have to pay writers. You know, the producers and directors didn't have that much to do. It was simple. And then the reality shows, once the writers were back, then they started actually writing for the reality shows, like Celebrity Apprentice or The Apprentice, Donald Trump's two shows. And those shows were carefully scripted to make Donald Trump look like the wise, successful businessman that he isn't, and to make the people coming there as, you know, the eager supplicants who are going to learn a brilliant lesson and be so grateful when they're done. Well, what they discovered was, A, reality shows get great ratings, and B, they're super cheap to produce. And they've been looking for the new reality show. You know, what's going to be the new thing, right? They've tried all these things, sticking people on desert islands and, you know, who's going to date who and, you know, are they going to hop into bed and blah, blah, blah. And it's all kind of passe. Well, the new reality show is Donald Trump in the White House. And, of course, it's starring a reality TV star who, you know, did this for 10 or 11 years and knows how to do it well. So Axios is reporting that media companies are now doubling down on even more politics. And they point out, at a relatively low cost. And they say in the last 90 days, politics has held steady as the number one most read category of thousands of member websites within the database of leading traffic. Cable news networks have seen record ratings. The Kavanaugh confirmation, for example, was Fox News' most watched Saturday primetime since the 2003 Iraq War. So expect to see a hell of a lot more of this stuff. The question is that going to inure benefit to Trump, or is it going to hurt him, or both? Meanwhile, Beto O'Rourke is fighting back. This is actually, it's not even Beto. It's a It is a an outside group, and the Richard Linklater produced a movie called Bernie, and it features a guy named Sonny Carl Davis. And after the break, I will be. Do we have enough time to play this, Nate?
27 seconds.
Oh, we got 27 seconds. Is that how long it is?
It's
30 seconds. Yeah. Okay. We're out of time. I'll play it for you right after the break. We have a hard break here at the bottom of the hour, but it's a great play on Ted Cruz's "I'm Tough as Texas," and of course the tagline on his ads is "Ted Cruz is tough as Texas. Vote for him." So we'll hear the pushback on that in just a moment, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. It is it's a little past 27 minutes past the hour, and we will be back with the new Tough as Texas ad about Beto O'Rourke, who's becoming a rock star. He spoke to 50,000 people, Beto O'Rourke. 50,000 people this week.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I mean, here you got this young guy from Texas who's pulling Obama and Bernie-sized crowds. This guy's going to be running for president in six or 10 years. Oh, welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. So Ted Cruz is campaigning across Texas as, "I'm the tough guy, right? I'm the Texas hombre. You know, don't mess with Texas. Don't mess with Ted. Ted Cruz is tough as Texas." Those are the ads. And here's the ad that this PAC has put up to talk back to Ted.
Somebody left something on my door the other day. It said, "Ted Cruz, tough as Texas." I mean, come on. If somebody called my wife a dog and said my daddy was in on the Kennedy assassination, I wouldn't be kissing their ass. You stick a finger in their chest and give them a few choice words. Or you drag their ass out by the woodshed and kick their ass, Ted. Come on. Ted. Somebody left the...
Yeah, does it continue from there?
No, that's it.
That was it? That was, yeah. Okay, so there you go. Come on, Ted. I love it. I absolutely love it. Speaking of Texas, Ray in Florence, Texas. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind?
Morning, Mr. Hartman. I love that ad.
Hey, me too. You can call me Tom, Ray. What's up?
Okay, Tom. Just calling to remind the voters in Texas and across the country, make sure that you're registered to vote. Today is the deadline in Texas.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's the deadline to register. We've had over 1 million registered this election cycle and over 400,000 of that since March, since the primary.
Wow.
And we're closing on 500,000.
That is great. Is the state playing games with those registrations like they're doing in Georgia and North Carolina, or are they actually letting them go onto the rolls?
They're trying to block some people. Especially there's a bunch of them that submitted their signatures digitally, and there's a big fight over that.
Yeah.
But I know there's different sites where you can check, or you can call certain phone numbers to check and see if you're registered, and if you're not, you can go ahead and submit another registration, and they can get you on the rolls.
There you go. And today, is the day if you live in Texas. So get out there and get registered.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and just remember that those right wingers, they want to enforce natural law and order. So we got to make sure we step up and do our part to create a movement for democracy to push back against authoritarianism.
There you go, Ray. What kind of ads is Ted Cruz running in Texas?
There's mostly a big one about that he's against the energy sector. He's against oil and natural gas. That's the main.
Oh, they're saying that. So the Ted Cruz ads are attack ads against Beto O'Rourke, saying he's opposed to the fossil fuel industry, basically.
That's the main one I've been seeing. I'm sure there's other ones around. But
yeah, fascinating. Do you think most Texans identify as hey, we're the state of fossil fuels, and that's a good thing? I think that's working.
Good number. I mean, it's a sizable number, but I know it's with our economy becoming a lot more diverse, there's definitely a lot of folks that have different views of Texas.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a huge state. Okay, Ray, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the heads up on that. Wayne in Keswick, Virginia. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Listening to your show's opening, you mentioned Riggleman in the 5th District of Virginia, Republican candidate, and he's running an ad here that claims that his opponent Leslie Coburn, wants to increase taxes for the average Virginian by $1,600. And that just, it has to be a lie.
Yeah.
Anybody that would run on that kind of platform these days wouldn't stand a chance. What gets me is, so far, the ad's been out for at least a week, and I haven't seen any response from Leslie Coburn. And
oh,
I think Democrats make a huge mistake when they let Republicans lie and get away with it.
Yeah. My guess would be that she's supporting something like single-payer health care, which would raise taxes, but it also would reduce
right.
your you know, health insurance premiums, so you actually
right.
end up ahead.
Right.
And they're taking that number. And you know, one of the problems is when you start trying to explain something with any complexity, and this is one of the reasons why we don't have single-payer. You know, if the if you try to explain something with any complexity, you've already lost the argument.
That as it may, I'm just.
Yeah.
I work with several folks who vote Republican, and they will accept what Riggleman is saying in the ad as it is, and you know.
Yeah, this is incredible.
That's all I got for you. Thanks.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for the heads up on that, Wayne. Appreciate it. Mark in San Diego, California. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I just wanted to call. I'm glad you got me on here quickly because I want to respond to that. Anti-Ted Cruz ad, which was fantastic. I've been waiting for somebody to do that because these Republicans always get away with taking on the mantle that they're the tough guy, when in actuality, it's exactly the opposite. You know, I mean, they always call liberals snowflakes, and I guess it's a sign of weakness to show compassion for your fellow man. But these guys, when it comes time to serve in the military, like old Trumpo during the 60s, he hid behind five draft deferments for bone spurs. Everybody knows that, but nobody brings it up often enough.
Yeah.
So every time they take this tough guy stance, I think you should smack him in the face, just like that ad against Ted Cruz. Smack him in the face right away and say, what are you talking about? You didn't serve in the military. Not one member of your family served in the military, tough guy. And you're the one that's a tough guy, and you hid behind those deferments. I think we should hit him with that every single time.
Yeah, it's one of the women who's a veteran, a wounded veteran. I'm thinking Tammy Baldwin, but I think actually who's the woman, the senator from Wisconsin? She has been, in any case, she's been referring to Donald Trump as Corporal Bone Spurs, and maybe Duckworth. And that Corporal Bone Spurs thing is starting to stick. I think it's a good one. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, you know, we're all talking about politics. This is a crime family.
Yeah, well, you're talking about the Trump crime family. Yeah, sure.
It's a crime family. They break laws. They don't pay their taxes.
I know. Every time I go on Fox, I use that phrase, and they haven't invited me back in a while. I'm guessing that's why. Although the first time I used that phrase on Fox News, the next day Sean Hannity started talking about Democratic crime families, the Clinton crime family. I thought, oh, jeez.
They even steal our shtick.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So your point, Corky, is what?
My point is, they're a crime family. You got to start treating them like that.
Okay, all right, I agree, and you know, and in fact, I think this New York Times reporting showing that Trump has, you know, he's only rich because of fraud. He just took massive amounts of money from his daddy's estate, and then wasted it repeatedly. His daddy kept having to bail him out. It's insane. Joan in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I saw you on the Real Time with Bill Maher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You were pretty good.
Thank you.
You were pretty good.
Thank you. Bill does
but
a good
my,
show.
Bill
does a great show. I was pleased to be
yes,
there.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. But I was calling for two reasons. One is the messaging of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
They really need someone like Frank Luntz. I think I'm pronouncing it last name. Because you, just like you just said, the more complex you get with your message, the less people hear you.
Yep.
So you really have to speak in what I call bumper sticker ease,
yep.
You know, catchphrases that will stick to you. They're short, but they're memorable.
Yeah.
Like the one that Obama used when he was running the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And but the Democrats seem to resist that, and I don't understand why. I mean, all of the communication nowadays is short and succinct. To talk to someone using compound sentences or even short paragraphs, and you lose them.
Yeah.
So you have to come up with phrases that are catchy and memorable, and that's how the Republicans outdo the Democrats all the time. The Democrats are doing good work, but if you don't get it out there to the people, they won't know about it. And if you don't get it out to them in a way that they can digest readily and easily, you haven't done anything.
Yeah.
And as far as the situation now with Trump, I've seen this coming since the early 70s. I knew, and then when Clinton got in the 90s and went to the right of center, I knew this was just a matter of time.
Yeah.
And then after Obama was elected, white males just lost their minds. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do anything. He didn't do anything to help black people. He didn't really do anything to help poor people. Well, he tried. But, I mean, as far as helping black people specifically, which was the fear of whites, he did absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that as a response to his presidency, I'm not surprised that Trump won. Because this is what America does. Takes one step in the right direction and two back.
Yeah, over and over and over again.
Over and over again.
Yeah, your point is really well taken, and I wish that, you know, I wrote a book for the Democrats back in 2008 called Cracking the Code about political messaging and how to boil things down and, like you said, bumper stickeries. And you know, Mark Pocan talks about campaigning on values instead of issues. And somehow, you know, outside of the Progressive Caucus, Democrats are missing it. Joan, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes, 10 seconds past the hour. Back with more of your calls in just a moment. And welcome back. Tony in Miami, Florida. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching
Hey,
Free Speech.
Got a question for you. If the Democrats take back the House and the Senate in the midterms there, and they do what you said, like yesterday on the show, where they're going to be doing all the going after them for investigations and putting out the subpoenas and everything like that, what happens if the Republicans flatly refuse to cooperate with that and destroy all whatever evidence they've got?
You know, I expect a lot of that sort of thing. I expect a lot of refusal to participate. I expect a lot of court challenges, many of which might go to the Supreme Court, at which point Ted Kavanaugh or Bart Kavanaugh might say, no, sorry, you know, you can't ask Republicans questions like that. I mean, who knows? And it's hard to predict exactly how it's going to play out, Tony, because so much is going to depend on how the press plays it. And
right.
And to a certain extent, that's going to depend on how the Republicans and the Democrats both strategize it, you know, how they put it out. I mean, this whole thing about the mob is pretty amazing when you consider, I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of women in the streets and thousands of women showing up at the Capitol. And you would think that that's a positive thing, right? That's voter engagement. That's citizen outrage. And the Republicans have turned this into it's the mob, you know, like a lynch mob or a, you know, I don't know what other words we use to precede mob, but you know, just, you know, basically negatively characterizing women and Democrats, and you know, it's significant what they are pulling off. It really is. So,
yeah,
but
it's almost going to be like a no loss, a lose lose deal for us if that does happen and it does go to the Supreme Court, because it'll be thrown out of court.
Could be. And if it is, then it, you know, I think that what we're going to see over the next couple of years is an increasing and galvanizing response to right-wing decisions on the court. The question is going to be, is John Roberts going to suddenly become a moderate to try to salvage his reputation and the court's reputation? Or is he going to stick with the right-wing ideologue positions that he brought into the court when he first came in. And I don't know the answer to that question. There's a lot of speculation around it. Tony, thanks a lot for the call. Mary in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Oh, I just wanted to let you know, we've got a really nail-biter of a race for Jeff Flake's seat.
Mm-hmm.
We have Martha McSally, who's in the she's in the Congress right now.
Right.
She was one of the first women in combat flying an A-10, and you know she's very proud of that. That's all she runs on. That mm-hmm. running, the fact that she has voted with Trump 97% of the time.
Right. Who's the Democrat?
Kyrsten Sinema.
Oh, that's right, Kyrsten Sinema.
A protester. They keep running this pink tutu ad about her protesting the war, and you know, only they turn it to she's protesting the military.
Right.
They have her running a real smeary. It was an ad showing her running this group that supported Al-Qaeda.
Oh, geez. See, this is the stuff. This is what I was talking about in the setup in the first segment of the show. This is the stuff that the Republicans are doing. They are smearing and lying. And the Democrats are running ads saying, here's our position. Here's what we will do for you. And the Republicans are going, they are evil. Look out. Beware. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, Mary. Ultimately, we're going to find out on November 6th. I am concerned, though. Welcome back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be in about 15 seconds. Brian in Dubuque, Iowa. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind?
Hey. Thanks, Tom. Donald Trump gave a speech to the Police Chiefs Association yesterday, I think
right.
it was.
Yeah, it was yesterday, either late morning, early afternoon, because he flew back to the White House after that for his Brett Kavanaugh thing.
I could only stomach like 5 minutes of it, but Trump literally said to the chiefs of police that the people who went after Kavanaugh are evil.
Wow.
And then he said it again. Those people are evil.
Wow.
Now, let me just say something. I'm not a perfect human being, and I'm not a strict moralist, but I have some morals and I have some principles that I try to believe in. But if Barack Obama or anyone else had said, I can go into the street and shoot someone, I wouldn't lose a vote, had been caught on tape bragging about sexually assaulting women, were convicted.
Let me say it again.
Convicted of fraud,
right.
And had to pay $25 million restitution to the people they harmed. He harmed with Trump University. Trump University. People don't know this. They don't like none of that puts up a red flag anywhere.
This is a failure of democratic messaging, basically, is what's going on here.
Part of that is that
the Democrats don't have the giant media infrastructure that the Republicans have. They don't have 1,000 radio stations across the country carrying continuous democratic programming like the Republicans have. They don't have a billionaire-owned network entirely devoted 24/7, 365 to democratic messaging the way the Republicans have. And
many
of the newspapers across the country, in fact, the majority of the newspapers across the country, are Republican or conservative. And on top of that, you got all these free newspapers, you know, that are passed out in the major cities, and or cheap newspapers in some cases. The Washington Post in New York, the Washington Beacon, which is free in I believe it's called the Beacon, or maybe it's the Examiner in D.C. They are literally, I mean, in D.C., you can't get onto a subway in the morning without somebody trying to hand you a free newspaper. And it's 16 pages of right-wing, you know, just dripping venom, you know, right out of Fox News kind of stuff. And the Democrats have no infrastructure like that. This is something that was built as a result of the Powell Memo in 1971. They built this through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and now they are using it. And, you know, until some very large donors in the Republican side get whiff of this and figure out what the hell is going on, or until Congress acts and says, no, we are going to restrict the use of money in politics, billionaire money and corporate money in politics, you know, which is going to take either a constitutional amendment or a change in the Supreme Court to reverse things like, you know, Citizens United and Buckley. Until that happens, it's going to continue being this way. And that's the scary thing. But that those changes that could happen as the result of changes on the Supreme Court. I'm going to get into that in the next hour. But anyhow, yeah. So, Brian, you know, you can finish your thought. Sorry.
Well, I don't want to sound like a bunch of sour grapes, but the last thing I want to say, and I just don't want to upset anyone, but you know, we weren't waiting in line for a carnival ride. It wasn't her turn. You know, people who won't admit they're wrong. I mean, I can't watch Stephanie Miller anymore. It's just, I love her. She's a good person. But what a bad attitude. You know, when I saw her with that little powwow, you guys, if I can use that phrase that you guys had on your show, I mean, it was nice that you guys got together and talked.
Yeah,
but
that was a while ago. Brian, thank you. Thanks for the call. I'm not going to get into other talk show hosts, and frankly, I'm not going to continue fighting the Bernie Hillary wars. There's no upside to it at all. I realize some people are upset about it all, but, you know, there's no upside to it. Martha, in Winter Haven, Florida, listening on 88.5 FM, one of our Pacifica affiliates down in Florida. Hey, Martha, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I am as frustrated as can be by the lack of clear messaging from the Democratic Party yet again. And one of the issues that it's just crazy that the Dems aren't taking it and beating the GOP over the head with it is the deficit. The tax cut blew the deficit to historic proportions.
Yeah.
And this is the party that just 2 years ago was insisting that any new spending that President Obama wanted had to be offset by spending cuts elsewhere.
Did you catch, Martha, the news this morning that it was a couple of days ago that the House voted, it's going to the Senate now, to raise the deficit by another $543 billion, $500 billion. By extending the tax cuts?
Yes. Isn't that convenient that our principles for the GOP are so, you know, bedrock when there's a Democrat in the White House, and then when a Republican gets in, it just all goes away? It's the same thing that happened with George Bush. You know, Ronald Reagan began this great tradition of running massive deficits, but yet somehow managing through Republican hocus-pocus to hang the Dems with the label of tax and spend and, you know, deficit spenders and fiscally irresponsible. And it's like the childhood taunt, you know, I'm rubber and you're glue. It's exactly what's happening here. And the deficit that we're looking at now has the potential to literally undo our society if it blows up. And we're on track for it to blow up in a terrible way.
Yeah, if interest rates go up 2 points, the interest on the national debt will be greater than what we're paying the Pentagon. And right now, it's mind-boggling. It's far more than we're spending on all our social programs combined. And this is not something new, and it's not something accidental. This is a strategy that Jude Winiski laid out in, I believe, 1976 in the Wall Street Journal, a two-Santa Claus theory, that when Republicans come into office, spend like drunken sailors, run up the debt, and then when Democrats come into office, scream about the debt and force the Democrats to shoot their own Santa Claus, Social Security and Medicare. And this is a calculated, well-thought-out, well-coordinated strategy that began with the Reagan administration. Ronald Reagan came into office. The national debt was $800 billion, less than a trillion. When he left, it was pushing $3 trillion. I think it was $2.4 trillion. Or $2.1 trillion, actually, is what it was. And they're continuing to do it. Our national debt now is over $20 trillion. And they just added, like we just said, another half a trillion dollars to the debt, or they're intending to. Trump hasn't signed the legislation right now. And why? Because they're getting ready for the Democrats.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.